Relation at Western reacts to him. One dark look speared in their direction, and they lose all sense of rational thought. It should probably drive me crazy, but how can it when Brayden continually goes out of his way to prove that I'm the only one he's thinking about? He grabs the door and holds it open. The moment we hit the sidewalk, a burst of cool autumn air wafts over me. The leaves have already fallen from the trees, and the temperatures are beginning to dip into cooler digits. The only saving grace is that the sun is bright and shining, cutting through the chilliness of the breeze. As we take a few steps away from the coffee shop, Brayden grabs hold of my hand, loosely interlocking our fingers.
I love the fall. It's my favorite time of year.
I glance at him in surprise. Me too. Even though it's small, it's yet another thing we have in common.
So I was kind of thinking that after the game on Saturday, I could take you to our family cabin. It's not far from here, only about an hour. We could spend Saturday afternoon, all of Sunday, and then head back in time for class Monday morning.
There's a pause.
What do you think? Any interest in tromping around the woods? Or we can just sit inside and chill out?
I mentally sift through my school and soccer schedule for the upcoming week and think about what can be shifted around. The idea of getting away for even a few days sounds amazing. Yeah, that could work. A smile lifts the corners of his lips.
Cool. It'll be fun.
He tugs me close, sliding his arm around my waist before adding softly,
It's been a while since I've been there.
I glance up, trying to decipher the emotion that weaves its way through his deep voice. Most people wouldn't pick up on the difference, but I've been spending so much time with Brayden that it's more noticeable. What I've discovered is that we're similar in how we deal with our emotions. We both tend to lock away the painful ones where we can't inspect them too closely. It takes us a while to share our inner thoughts and feelings with other people. It makes me feel special that he's gradually opening up, revealing the guy buried beneath all the hype. And I like the guy he's proving to be. That's not something I expected to happen. How come? Brayden jerks his shoulders as his expression clouds. Gone is the light-hearted, easygoing guy from moments ago. A heavy silence descends as we continue walking. It feels strangely at odds with the bright sunshine that slants down on our heads. I'm almost tempted to change the subject or fill in the sudden stillness with idle chatter.
When I was a kid, we used to spend a ton of time at the cabin. Sometimes the entire summer. Since my father's death, I've only been there once or twice. It hurt too much to be there without him, so I stopped going.
His earnest response has my heart cracking wide open. Even though we're in the middle of campus and there are people rushing past on the way to class, I grind to a halt. His footsteps falter as he turns and stares at me in question. My hand rises to drift over his shadowed jaw as I hold his gaze. Only now that I'm staring at him do I see the pain and grief swirling through his dark eyes. If you're not up to it, we don't have to go, I say softly. The thick tension filling his muscles loosens as he sinks into my touch.
I know, but I want to take you there and share how special the place is with you. I want to have you all to myself.
He glances around the crowded path overrun with students.
We can't do that here.
Brayden lives in a house with four other guys, and I share an apartment with Demi. It's almost impossible for us to grab more than a handful of hours alone together. Plus, we're both in the middle of our seasons. Our schedules are packed tight. It's not often that we can carve out a large chunk of time to spend with one another. As much as I would love to get away from campus, even for a few days, it's obvious that the cabin holds a lot of bittersweet memories for him. I know exactly what that's like.
It's not easy to deal with. Are you sure? We could always drive somewhere else for the day. It takes a few seconds for Brayden to blink away the heavy emotion in his eyes as he jerks his head into a nod. Before I can dig any deeper, he presses his lips to mine and murmurs,
"Yeah, I want to share the cabin with you. Who knows, maybe it'll help. We had a lot of good times there, and I want to make new memories with you."
The edges of my lips curl upward, liking the idea. "I want that too." He squeezes my fingers.
"Good. Now let's get moving before we're late."
Chapter 29, Sydney.
Demi stretches out on my bed as I grab a few shirts from my drawer and toss them in the duffel bag I'm packing. Brayden and I are leaving tomorrow after the game. Even though we'll be gone for less than 48 hours, I'm excited to get away from school.
"I can't believe you two are taking off for the weekend."
"Yeah, that makes two of us."
"I almost have whiplash from how fast this relationship is moving," she muses before adding, "It doesn't seem like all that long ago that you were ready to punch his lights out if he looked at you sideways."
I snort. She's not mistaken about that. Any time I was forced into close proximity with Brayden, I would bare my teeth like a rabid dog, ready to bite his head off at the slightest offense. A flicker of guilt slides through me at my treatment of him. Had I understood what was going on at the time, I would have shrugged it off and moved on. Instead, I took his behavior personally and let it fester inside. I guess that old saying is true. You never know what's going on in someone else's life. Just because they project a happy facade to the world doesn't mean they aren't splintering apart on the inside, barely able to hold it together. My heart constricts, thinking about how much pain Brayden must have been in freshman year. Instead of dealing with his grief in a productive manner, he chose alcohol and girls to drown himself in. As close as we've grown in the past few weeks, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about the people we've lost. Right now, it's simply enough to know that we've had similar experiences and understand what that kind of heartache feels like. It's a bond that no one wants to have. I glance at my best friend. Demi would be shocked to learn that my relationship with Brayden has progressed at even more of a rapid pace than she realizes. I still haven't disclosed that we were pretending to go out in the beginning. Now that we're actually a couple, there doesn't seem to be much point in revealing the truth.
"You're right," I agree. "That's exactly the way I felt. What I've discovered is that Brayden isn't the guy I'd assumed he was, and now that I've taken the time to get to know him, I realize how wrong I was."
She nods. "He's a really good guy. I've always had a soft spot for him. And you know what?" Before I can respond, she continues. "I like that you two are drama-free. I no longer have to worry about walking into the middle of World War III when I walk through the door."
Demi's joking. Kind of. So many of my relationships were like riding a roller coaster with the ups and downs. This one couldn't be more different. Brayden and I are so in sync with one another. That's not something I've experienced with other guys. Even though it hasn't been long, I can appreciate that what we have is special. That knowledge makes me want to hang on tightly to it with both hands and never let go. None of my past relationships were on this level, even the one with Ethan. The highs and lows were exhausting, and it never truly allowed us to drill beneath the surface and get to know one another on a deeper, more meaningful level. It's only now that I'm with Brayden, and have experienced something more even-keeled, that I can understand and appreciate the difference. "Now all I have to worry about is walking in on the two of you getting it on," she adds, cutting into my thoughts. "Ugh. Demi has yet to let me live that down.
Technically, I point out, that's your fault for not knocking on the door, and at least I was in my own bedroom when it happened. If I recall correctly, I walked in on you and Rowan making out on the couch. Unlike me, she'd been topless.
Color slams into her cheeks.
Yeah, that was definitely not one of my finer moments. Maybe not. But it had been hilarious. For me, anyway. Demi, not so much. When the corners of my lips tremble, hers do the same. Pretty soon, we're both laughing. It takes a few moments before our humor subsides.
You know what's funny? I'd always suspected that Brayden had feelings for you.
Ironically, I hadn't been able to see it for myself. I had thrown up enough walls to make my heart an impenetrable fortress where he was concerned. And yet, somehow he managed to smash through all of them.
You two make a really great couple, she continues. I hope it lasts.
As much as I've tried to hold myself back and take things slow, the truth is that I've fallen hard and fast. I'm in deeper than I ever thought possible, and it scares the shit out of me. I glance up from the bathing suit I'm shoving in the bag.
Brayden mentioned there was a hot tub, and I want to be prepared for whatever this weekend has in store.
Me too, I admit softly. This is the first time I've acknowledged my feelings out loud, and doing so makes them all the more real.
Who would have ever thought that Brayden Kendricks would turn out to be your boo thing?
I snort. No one. That's who. Do we really need more proof that miracles can happen?
Chapter 30. Brayden. I turn the truck onto a narrow country road that's flanked on both sides by tall trees spearing up into the bright blue sky. The closer we get to the cabin, the more nausea churns at the bottom of my gut. Why the hell did I think bringing Sydney here was a good idea? At the moment, it seems like a pretty shit one. This place holds way too many memories. And the closer I get to the property, the more the nerves sitting at the bottom of my gut feel like they'll revolt. The hardest part is that all of my recollections are happy ones. I don't have a single bad one of this place, except they all revolve around my father. Thinking about him always feels like ripping open an old wound. Other than the football field, this was Dad's happy place. After he and Mom got married, they purchased a couple hundred acres of wooded property with a spring-fed, 5-acre lake in the middle. After each NFL season ended, we would spend time here, tromping around in the forest, riding ATVs, hiking, fishing, and camping. It was the only time that we had Dad all to ourselves. Here, he wasn't a famous NFL player. He was simply a loving father and husband. Summers were always the best. Even though the cabin is massive, Dad and I would pitch a tent in the yard near the lake and sleep outside under the stars. A small campfire would burn all night. In the morning, we'd wake up bright and early. He would cook eggs and bacon over an open fire, and then we would fish for the day. Those are some of the best memories I have of my childhood. It's painful to acknowledge that we will never make more. Dad is gone. This is the one place on the face of the earth where there's no avoiding the past. My father was this place. He and the land are deeply entwined. You can't have one without the other. Every year I fail to return makes it more difficult to consider the possibility of coming back in the future. The cabin used to fill me with so much happiness. I can't imagine that ever being the case again. I wouldn't be making this trip without Sydney by my side. If there's anyone capable of soothing the anguish that lurks deep within me, it's this girl. She understands what loss feels like on this kind of gut-wrenching level, because she's experienced it too. She's quickly becoming my everything. These feelings snuck up on me when I was least expecting them. Know what the real kicker is? That I have Kira to thank for it. Yeah, Kira. It's doubtful that the two of us would have gotten together if not for her. For obvious reasons, I won't be sharing that information with the tawny-haired girl anytime soon. Even though she seems to be going strong with her new boyfriend, I think that news would go down like a lead balloon. I'm jostled from those thoughts when Sydney reaches over and wraps her fingers around mine.
Are you doing all right?
The question is hesitantly asked. She's worried. One flick of my gaze in her direction confirms the concern brimming in her vivid green eyes. I probably should have kept my reservations about returning to myself. But that's the thing. I don't want to hold back the truth from Sydney. After all the lies that were told in the beginning of our relationship, I can't tolerate anything less than raw honesty between us. And being candid with her feels a little bit like vanquishing the ghosts of my past. Afterward, they don't seem quite so formidable. I'm fine. Maybe a little nervous, I admit, twisting my fingers so that I can encompass hers. The last thing I want to do is freak her out. With a nod, she nibbles at her lower lip.
We don't have to do this, Bray. We could easily rent a hotel room for the night and stay there. Maybe explore the area tomorrow before heading back to school.
Yep, we could, but I don't want to do that. It's been years since I stepped foot on this property, and with Sydney by my side, I feel strong enough to finally come face to face with the past. I don't question that she's become so important to me in such a short span of time. When something feels right, there's no need to overthink it. And Sydney feels right. Our relationship feels right. It's as if something fundamental has finally clicked into place that I never realized was missing. It's not something that can be explained away with logic. It just is. I promise, I'm good. I turn the truck onto a narrower road. The woods grow thick and dense, hugging the sides of the lane until it feels like the branches could scrape against the door panels. If it were summer, the leaves would form a canopy and block out the bright shafts of sunlight that pour down. A frown settles on her face as Sydney straightens and stares out the passenger side window.
Are you sure we're going the right way?
A nervous edge has crept into her tone. It takes a lot to rattle Sydney. The girl has nerves of steel. My lips lift into a smile as I shoot her a quick glance. This isn't the place where I want to take my eyes off the road for long. I'm liable to wrap the front end of the truck around a tree. Yep. It's a little more overgrown than I remember, but it's still the same.
I'm going to keep it real with you. It feels like this road is going to dead end and we'll be stuck out here in the woods.
There's a pause before she adds, and then we'll get murdered by a roving band of psycho killers. I snort out a laugh. It's highly doubtful that psycho killers even know this place exists. Plus, you're much more likely to get mauled by a bear than a crazy with a chainsaw. Color drains from her face as her eyes widen.
You better be joking.
Of course I am. Sort of. Every rut we hit in the road makes Sydney yelp and grab the oh shit bar. 3 minutes later, the lane finally opens to a wider driveway. Both the log cabin and lake come into view. Sydney leans forward in her seat as her eyes widen for the second time in a matter of minutes.
Wow,
she breathes. Yeah, the view is spectacular. No matter how many times I've been here, it always hits me the same way as we come over the hill and the road opens up, surveying the land and water. The truck rolls toward the embankment that overlooks the lake before I shift the gear into park and cut the engine. For a long, silent moment, we sit and take in the landscape beyond the windshield. The water is surrounded by dense forest with cattails on the sides. Both deciduous and pine trees make up the jagged landscape. Even though all the leaves have fallen, carpeting the earth in reds, browns, and golden hues, it's still a majestic sight. The land looks pristine and untouched by the hand of man. There are a few puffy white clouds marring the cornflower blue sky. Their reflection is echoed in the glassy surface of the water.
This is really beautiful, Brayden.
Her gaze stays fastened on the view. Yeah, it is. And I've missed it. My dad loved this land,
And just being here, seeing it again, smelling the crisp fall air, makes me feel like he's here with me. Maybe I can't see or speak with him, but his presence is all around me, and somehow, that eases the ache in my heart. It only reconfirms that bringing Sydney here was the right decision to make. My fingers settle over hers. Are you ready to see the cabin? Her attention flickers to mine as she nods. We exit the truck and grab our bags from the back seat before heading toward the house. Our shoes crunch the gravel that lines the drive beneath them. You know, when you told me we would be staying in a cabin, I'd prepared myself for something smaller, maybe even a little dilapidated. My lips quirk as a chuckle bursts free. My family has always referred to this place as a cabin, because that's exactly what it is. A log cabin made from the poplar trees harvested from this very property. The structure itself is 3,000 square feet and 2 stories high. There's a wide front porch that wraps around the entire first floor. A white swing has been hung near the front door, and other seating arrangements are spaced out to enjoy the differing views. In the mornings, I'd always find my parents lounging on the couch with steaming mugs of coffee. There were even a few times when I stumbled upon them kissing. Back then, it had embarrassed the hell out of me, but now it brings me comfort to know that they had a happy marriage. They rarely fought and always enjoyed being in each other's company. Dad has been gone for 4 years, and not once has Mom mentioned dating. As difficult as it would be to see her move on with someone else, I want her to be happy. It takes effort to shake myself out of the sly memories attempting to wrap around me. No, there's nothing dilapidated about it. I pull out the key and slide it in the lock. We have a neighbor about 20 minutes away who stops by every other week to check on the mechanicals and make sure everything is in working order. Mom and Elle try to make it up here a few times a year. Whenever they plan a weekend, they invite me along. I always have a handy excuse ready. Neither of them has pushed the issue. I think all three of us realize what I'm doing. Mom was thrilled when I told her I wanted to bring Sydney here for a few days. I haven't introduced them yet, but that's next on the agenda. When I open the door, she steps inside with her bag hoisted over one shoulder. Her gaze bounces around the double-story family room. Beyond the expansive area is a kitchen. My parents designed the space to be open and airy. They wanted to create a place where we could all gather comfortably and spend time together as a family. At the far end of the room is a massive stone fireplace that takes up the entire wall. A chandelier made of antlers hangs from the ceiling. A white, oversized sectional curves around one of the walls. Opposite that is a long stretch of windows that overlook the lake. It would be a challenge not to find a gorgeous view from anywhere in this house, but the one from here is especially breathtaking. This place is amazing, Sydney says quietly, soaking up all the details. She looks slightly overwhelmed. I probably should have mentioned that my family has money. It's just not something that usually comes up in conversation. When she remains motionless, I wrap my arm around her waist and tug her close. I've really missed this place. Now that I'm standing inside the cabin, taking in my surroundings, I realize just how true the sentiment is. I stayed away because I thought it would be too painful to return without my father. It's only now that I wonder if I didn't inflict more damage by not digging deep and finding the courage to return sooner. Dad's presence is everywhere, in every detail of the craftsmanship. I never expected it to feel like balm for the soul. In fact, I had prepared myself for the opposite. Are you ready for the grand tour?
Yep, I want to see it all, she says lightly.
After spending the last few days worried that I'd made a mistake, everything now feels buoyant. There's a lightness that fills the atmosphere. The smile Sydney showers me with says that she feels the shift in energy as well. With my fingers clasped around hers, I tug her through the first floor. The kitchen, with its stainless steel appliances and massive granite island, is our first stop. Mom mentioned that the refrigerator would be fully stocked for the weekend. I open the door and find enough food to feed a small army. I'm sure the neighbors brought over groceries so we wouldn't have to run to the store. There's a large dining room on the other side of the kitchen with views of the forest. We peek in the master suite before jogging up the staircase to the second floor and arriving at a loft that overlooks the family room. There's an overstuffed couch that we used to hang out on and watch movies. I have so many fond memories of my sister and me sprawled out on the carpeted floor, playing board games, while Mom puttered around in the kitchen, making dinner or baking chocolate chip cookies. Down the wide stretch of hallway are four spacious bedrooms, each with their own ensuite. Mine is the first door on the right. I pull Sydney inside and glance around the space. The walls are painted a dark blue, and there's a thick plaid comforter covering the queen-sized bed. The decor is outdoorsy and fits with the theme of the cabin. A heavy wave of nostalgia crashes over me as I stare at what I've always considered my second bedroom. It all looks and feels the same as it did when I was a kid. In the summers, my parents allowed us to bring friends for a week or so. Carson has been here dozens of times, but inviting a girl is a new experience. I've never liked anyone enough to want to share this place with them. As I drop my bag on the bed, Sydney does the same. I step closer and take her into my arms before pressing a kiss against the crown of her head. I'm glad you're here. Honestly, I don't think I've ever meant anything more. She tilts her chin until our gazes can lock and hold. Me too. For the remainder of the afternoon, we hold hands and tromp through the woods, spotting a couple of deer before they disappear through the underbrush. The forest is teeming with life. Birds chirp overhead, squirrels chatter in the trees, and larger animals crunch leaves beneath their feet in the distance. I've missed the property so much, and it feels good to share it all with Sydney. Everything my dad taught me about the forest, as well as the memories. Instead of being filled with sorrow and grief, I actually feel lighter talking about him. I haven't done that in a long time. Once the floodgates open, it's almost impossible to close them. Sydney listens attentively, only asking questions every once in a while. It's like she understands that I need to get the words out, and she quietly allows me to do that. Our hands remain clasped as we walk along the water's edge. Even though the weather has turned cooler, there are still swarms of fish at the end of the dock where the sun warms the water. Now that I've ripped off the Band-Aid and it hasn't turned out to be as painful as I anticipated, I can imagine returning here more often. I like getting Sydney away from campus. She's more relaxed and easygoing in this environment. When 7 o'clock rolls around, we're both famished from our explorations. We search through the fridge and cabinets and find everything we need to make spaghetti. It's something simple, yet filling. She boils the water and takes charge of the noodles and garlic bread. I man the sauce and make the salads. The relaxed way we move around the kitchen feels like we've done this hundreds of times before. There's a natural camaraderie between us that I've never experienced with anyone else. By the time we eat dinner and clean up the kitchen, it's after 9 o'clock. With her fingers enclosed in mine, I pull her out to the back porch. There's a wide swath of lawn that makes up the yard. One side is flanked by the lake, and the other by dense foliage. In the middle of the space is a fire pit with brightly painted Adirondack chairs scattered around it. Steps away from the back door is a small hot tub. I pull back the cover and check the temperature. It's set to 100 degrees, which, in this weather, is perfect. A smile simmers around my lips as I yank off my t-shirt and drop it to my feet. Sydney jerks her thumb toward the house. I need to go inside and change into my suit. That's not necessary, I say with a smirk. She shakes her head before peering into the darkness that surrounds us with narrowed eyes. There's not a neighbor around for miles, I remind. What about the psycho killers? I'm pretty sure they've got the night off. She snorts out a laugh before dragging her shirt over her head. Then she shoves the denim material down her legs before stepping out of it until she's standing before me in nothing more than a black sports bra and thong. Holy shit. Sydney has proven that a sports bra can be just as sexy as one made out of lace. The sight of her is enough to bring me to my knees. My mouth dries as I shove my jeans down and kick them away so that I'm left standing in my boxer briefs. With her attention fastened on me, she reaches around her back and flicks open the clasp of her bra. The straps slide down her arms, revealing slightly rounded breasts with small, dusky-colored nipples. My gaze travels over her greedily, touching upon every single inch of her naked flesh. The lights from the house cast her in a mixture of soft light and shadow. Does Sydney have any idea how fucking beautiful she is, or how much I want her, how much I've always wanted her, even when I was trying to fool myself into believing that I didn't? Her fingers hover at the elastic band around her hips. Before she can slip them beneath the stretchy material, I break the heavy silence that has fallen over us. Let me do that. It only takes 3 steps to close the distance. I sink to my knees, tilting my head and staring up at her until our gazes catch and hold. Anticipation thrums through me as I slip my fingers beneath the band and slowly slide the tiny scrap down her hips until her perfectly shaved pussy is revealed. Once the thong has been removed, I press a kiss against the top of her slit. Sydney's fingers tangle in my hair as I slip my tongue between her lower lips. A sigh of contentment erupts from her, and she tightens her hold. Doesn't this girl realize that the grip is unnecessary? There's no way in hell I'm going anywhere. For the first time in my life, I'm exactly where I want to be, and that's with her. I spread her lips before running the flat of my tongue over her softness. Another whimper escapes as she arches her pelvis. I focus my attention on her clit, licking and sucking the tiny bundle of nerves into my mouth until she explodes. I work her delicate flesh until her muscles finally loosen. Only then do I rise to my feet and shove the boxers down my legs before picking her up and carrying her to the hot tub. She rests her head against my chest as we sink into the warm water. With her tucked close, I realize this is the happiest I've been since my father died. And that has everything to do with this girl, the one who has changed everything for me.
Chapter 31, Sydney. I wake to the steady rhythm of raindrops hitting the windows. I have no idea what time it is, but the skies are dark, leaden gray. It only makes me want to snuggle against Braden and stay in bed, cocooned in his blankets for the entire day. And since we don't have any plans, we can do exactly that. Yesterday turned out to be one of the most enjoyable afternoons I've ever experienced. My parents never took us camping, so this is the closest I've come to it. In no way am I saying that I'd like to pitch a tent and sleep outdoors, but this is a good compromise. I'm not going to lie. The idea that we're so far from civilization is a little disconcerting. If I opened my window at home and yelled, 6 people would come running. Here, I could probably scream my head off, and not a soul would hear me. What I like most is that I have Braden all to myself. We're free to do what we want, even if that means lounging around and being lazy. That's not something either of us gets to indulge in very often. It's a real treat to not have a schedule for the day. If the skies don't clear, we can make popcorn, curl up on the couch and watch movies. If the sun comes out, we can explore the forest and lake. Maybe relax in the hot tub again. Arousal stirs in my core as I remember the way he tongued me, getting me off before scooping me up and carrying me into the water where we had sex. The guy is insatiable, and I absolutely love it. Since he's still stretched out beside me, snoring soundly, I slip quietly from the bed before grabbing a sweatshirt and yoga pants and padding to the kitchen to make breakfast. I'm starving, and I bet money that Braden is too. I pull out everything I need to make pancakes and bacon before getting to work. There's something relaxing about the sound of the rain plinking against the vast expanse of windows. It doesn't take long before I'm humming to myself. This kitchen is like a chef's dream.
Everything looks to be top of the line. The stove is massive and has an industrial appearance to it. Once the griddle is heated, I pour batter onto the nonstick surface and wait for it to bubble. It's funny, since I'll be graduating in the spring, I've spent a lot of time thinking about my future. Those thoughts have always centered on my career and the accounting job waiting for me at my father's company. Boys have come and gone from my life with such regularity that I never considered someone might actually stick around after graduation. Braden is the first person I could imagine being with long-term, which seems crazy, and yet, there's something about him. Something about the way we are together. It makes me think that we could be going strong years down the road. I shake my head. I'm getting way ahead of myself. This must be what relationship happiness feels like. Braden chooses that moment to stumble into the kitchen. His eyes are barely cracked open, and his hair is mussed. I'm tempted to run my fingers through the short strands. He didn't bother putting on anything other than boxers that hug his lean hips and thighs.
"What are you doing up so early?"
he grumbles, voice all low and sexy. It strums something deep inside, nearly making me forget about the pancakes I'm in the process of flipping. I glance at the clock. It's after 9. I thought you might be hungry.
"I woke up craving something, but it's not food," he says,
padding over and wrapping his arms around me before pressing a kiss against the column of my neck. His words make my belly hollow out as need throbs to life in my core. "How about we eat pancakes and then talk about the other?" My voice comes out sounding breathless, even to my own ears.
"I'm not interested in talking,"
he growls against my neck.
"I'm interested in fucking."
Oh, God. The way Braden talks is enough to start a veritable inferno in my panties. As he nibbles his way from my throat to my mouth, I realize that I need to push him away or breakfast will end up a burnt disaster, and I've put in way too much effort for that to happen. Plus, I get the feeling we'll need our sustenance for the rest of the day, whether or not the sky's clear. Once I've piled the pancakes on the plate and pulled the perfectly crisp bacon from the oven, we sit down and eat. Or I should say that Braden tugs me onto his lap, and we share one plate until both our bellies are full. Only after every bite has been consumed does he push the dish away before wrapping both hands around the small of my waist and hoisting me onto the long stretch of table as if I weigh nothing at all. His fingers trail from my hips to my thighs before nudging them open. The heated look he shoots me is enough to send my belly into freefall.
"Why are you wearing so much clothing?"
My mouth turns cottony. It was cold when I got out of bed.
"Don't worry, I'll keep you warm."
With that, he pulls the sweatshirt over my head and tugs the stretchy yoga pants down my hips and thighs until I'm completely naked. His hands stroke over my inner thighs, spreading my legs impossibly wide as his gaze stays locked on my core. I've never been embarrassed or shy about my body. I've been an athlete my entire life. I'm focused on how strong and fast I am rather than the physical attributes men find appealing. I'm well aware that my breasts are small and my thighs are more muscular than most girls. To have Braden stare so blatantly sets my nerves on edge. No one has ever studied me with such intensity, especially while stretched out on the dining room table like I'm a main course to be feasted on. As tempting as it is to close my legs or pull him up so that he'll kiss me and stop staring at the most intimate part of my body, I remain still, allowing him to lick his fill. The only reason I'm able to do so is because of the reverence shining in his eyes. He makes me feel beautiful. His fingers drift over my core, rubbing, but never lingering in one place for long. It doesn't take much before I'm growing restless beneath his expert touch.
"You're so fucking pretty,"
he whispers, gaze pinned to my center.
"I can't get enough of you. I love everything about your pussy,"
he muses, almost as if he's talking to himself rather than me.
"So soft and tight. I love when my cock is buried deep inside you. The way your muscles clench around me right before you come. The little moans that escape from your lips when I lick you."
His gaze flickers to mine.
"You love it, don't you?"
It's not a question. We both know that I do. Brayden has a very talented tongue. I can't get enough of it. When I remain silent, his fingers brush over me before circling around my clit, giving it a little pinch. The pressure isn't enough to cause pain. It does, however, send a bolt of need spiraling through me.
"Tell me you love it,"
he growls. "I do," I say in a heady rush. "You know I do." His lips lift into a smug smile.
"Yeah, but I like to hear you say it."
There's a pause before he adds,
"I don't want anyone else to ever touch you this way."
At this moment, it's impossible to imagine anyone other than Brayden running his hands and mouth over me like this. There's a level of intimacy we've managed to achieve that feels rare, and I don't ever want to lose it. Just when I can't take another second of his caresses, he rises to his feet and yanks down the front of his boxers until his thick cock is able to spring free. He pumps his erection a few times as I spread my legs further. I'm mesmerized by the movements. I've never seen anything as hot in my life as Brayden stroking himself. With his hands still wrapped around his girth, he positions the crown at my entrance, sliding in only an inch or two. It feels so damn good, but it's not nearly enough to get me off. The wicked smile that curves his lips tells me that his movements are purposeful. A little flex of dominance to let me know who is in charge, at least for the moment. I arch off the table, attempting to coax him further inside me.
"I decide how much you get, not you,"
he growls, slapping my clit with the tips of his fingers. A gasp escapes as a thousand little shockwaves explode inside me. Even though the strike isn't hard, it's certainly enough to capture my attention. Brayden slides in another inch, and my body shudders with pleasure. This little game he's intent on playing only intensifies my arousal until it turns unbearable, until climax is all I can focus on. "Brayden, please," I whimper, unable to stay still. "I need more." Almost stingily, he gives me a bit of length. As ecstasy ripples through my being, he withdraws, leaving me feeling bereft once again.
"I know you do, baby."
His voice is tightly strung, as if he's just as pained and full of need as I am. And then it starts all over again. Each time he teases me, the pleasure ratchets up to unprecedented heights. The smooth slide of his cock fuels my senses until they reach a fever pitch, until I don't think I can take any more of this torment before breaking out into frustrated sobs. Just as I'm about to beg him to fuck me, Brayden drives deep inside my sheath, and a scream explodes from my lungs. The orgasm slams into me like a tidal wave, crashing over me, threatening to drag me to the very bottom of the ocean. The intensity of my reaction seems to spur him on as Brayden finds his own release and we come together. He chants my name before collapsing on top of me and burying his face in the crook of my neck. We lay there for a long time, our hearts beating like the wings of a hummingbird, before eventually settling. When he finally lifts his head, there's a cocky smirk curving his lips.
Now that's more what I had in mind for breakfast.
A chuckle slips free as I tunnel my fingers through his thick hair. The pancakes were definitely good, but Brayden is right. This was much better. Chapter 32, Sydney. The soft patter of rain continues to fall for the rest of the afternoon. It would have been nice to go outside and explore the area, but I can't say that I mind curling up on the couch and having a movie marathon. With a flame dancing in the grate, we lay entwined on the sectional, covered in a blanket. For lunch, Brayden whips up a few grilled cheese sandwiches and tomato soup. It's the perfect meal that hits the spot. While he cleans up the dishes, I wander around the cabin. That thought makes me snort. In no way does this place resemble a dark, dank cottage. This could legit be someone's home. It's outfitted with all the amenities and creature comforts a person could need. Other than being situated in the middle of nowhere, it's perfect. My thoughts meander back to this morning as I stroll through the family room, taking in all the knickknacks on display. Maybe I'm wrong about this privacy thing. Maybe it is kind of nice. I gravitate to the massive stone fireplace with its jagged rocks and rich hues of gray and blue. Warmth emanates from the fireplace, and I hold out my hands to warm them. Even though this cabin's temperature is toasty, the heat feels good as it seeps into my bones. I study the framed photographs propped on the mantel. There are numerous ones of Brayden and his sister Elle at various stages of their childhood. I pick up one silver frame and examine the picture. My guess is that Brayden must be somewhere around 10 years old. A huge grin lights up his youthful face, and his dark eyes dance with excitement. His chest is bare as he holds up a fish with one hand. There's another of him and Elle at Christmas. In the background is a beautifully decorated tree that stretches toward the two-story ceiling. Both siblings are busy ripping into gifts with excited expressions painted across their faces. I run my fingers slowly over his image. It's not a surprise that he was such a cutie. The third picture is one of a woman and man. They look to be in their mid-30s. He's tall and muscular, built much like Brayden, and she's more petite, coming only to his shoulder. Their arms are wrapped around each other as they beam at the camera. I study the photograph as something pings in the back of my brain. His face looks vaguely familiar, although there's no reason to suspect that I would have met Brayden's father. I pull it closer and examine the image more carefully. I'm shaken out of my scrutiny when Brayden comes up behind me and slides his arms around my waist before tugging me close and nuzzling my neck.
That's Mom and Dad.
It's a beautiful picture. They look happy. He nods. When he says nothing more, I twist around and find sadness flickering in his eyes. As he stares at the photograph, I can almost see him getting lost in the memories. I'm intimately acquainted with that feeling, and all I want to do in this moment is banish it for him. Carefully, I set the framed photograph back where I found it, before turning and looping my arms around his neck. If it's too painful, we don't have to talk about your father, I say softly. The fact that you've come here is a big step. It's enough.
No, I want to tell you about him. I want you to know the kind of guy he was and how much he meant to me.
There's a pause.
To all of us.
Brayden shifts our bodies so that we're facing the mantle before pointing to a large silver-framed photograph of the four of them.
That's the last family picture that was taken of us. I was a junior in high school.
Again, I study his mother. She's beautiful, with shining dark hair and eyes. It's obvious who Elle takes after as she stands in front of her. Even though she has braces, she flashes a bright smile toward the camera. My gaze moves to Brayden. He's not as tall as he is now, and certainly not as broad in the shoulders or chest. His hair is a little longer than I'm used to seeing, but he's still ridiculously handsome. And then my attention settles on the man who was ripped from their lives.
He and my mom met when they were in high school and fell in love. They got married when they were still in college before Dad was drafted to the NFL.
I glance at him, brows drawing together. He played professional football? Brayden nods.
Yep, for 15 years. And then he injured his shoulder. That's when he decided it was time to retire.
I study the picture more intensely, as something continues to niggle the back of my brain. I didn't realize Brayden's father played in the NFL. I guess it makes sense that he would want to follow in his footsteps. What was his name?
Jake.
And just like that, a trap door opens and I'm in free fall. Jake Winchester? I murmur. My voice comes out sounding strangled. It's as if someone has their hands wrapped around my throat and is slowly squeezing the life out of me. Brayden's gaze flickers to me in surprise.
Yeah, that's right. The last team he played for was the Chicago Bears before retiring. We got to spend about 5 years with him before a dumbass kid who was drunk took him out.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. I can't believe this is happening. My head spins until I'm dizzy with the sensation, and I can't catch my breath. You don't have the same last name? I wheeze.
No, my mother never changed her maiden name, so I'm stuck with both. Mine is hyphenated, but I just use Kendricks. It's easier that way.
A small smile quirks the corners of his lips.
Kendricks Winchester is kind of a mouthful. Plus, can you see that on the back of a jersey?
I can only stare as my mind cartwheels. Brayden is the son of Jake Winchester. Not once did it occur to me that his father could be the same man Peter killed in the accident.
Hey,
he says, interrupting the whirl of my thoughts.
Is something wrong? You've gone pale. Do you need to sit down?
It isn't until he lifts his thumb to wipe away the moisture gathered beneath my eyes that I realize I'm crying. It's almost impossible to blink back the hot tears. No, I'm fine. I gulp down the thick emotion before forcing out the rest. I'm just really sorry. In no way does that adequately describe what's crashing around inside me. The grief that is crushing the very life out of me, making it impossible to breathe. He pulls me closer until the side of my face is pressed against his chest before dropping a kiss against the crown of my head.
There's absolutely nothing for you to be sorry about. It's not like you had anything to do with the accident.
I squeeze my eyes tightly closed, wishing that were the truth, but knowing it isn't. And sooner or later, Brayden will arrive at the same conclusion. Chapter 33, Sydney. I tip my face toward the warm spray of water and pray that it washes away the guilt that's eating me alive. I have no idea what to do. Should I tell Brayden what I've only now discovered? Do I confess that it was my brother who hit and killed his father?
That Peter was the stupid kid who'd had too many drinks before sliding behind the wheel of his car. The thought of pushing out those words makes me sick to my stomach. There have been so many times throughout the afternoon and then evening when I turned to him, fully prepared to vomit out the truth. Each time I opened my mouth prepared to come clean, I couldn't do it. The sound refuses to be summoned. It's only a matter of time before Braden makes the connection. I'm a little shocked that neither of us pieced it together before this very moment. Even with different surnames, I should have realized it. For so long, I've done everything in my power not to think about the man Peter killed, or his family. I'd relegated the information to the back of my brain and locked it safely away. The guilt and sorrow were too heavy to carry around on a daily basis. Only now do I realize why the photographs had seemed so eerily familiar. After the accident, there had been a slew of articles splashed across the front page of the paper and stories reported on the local news. Every time I'd caught sight of the pictures, it had been like a sucker punch to the gut. There had been one of him in his football uniform the last year he played in the NFL, and then one of his family. It's the same image displayed on Braden's mantle. Nausea churns at the bottom of my belly until it feels like I'm going to heave everything I've recently ingested. I don't know how much longer I can withstand this. I can't even look at Braden without wanting to cry. When fresh tears sting my eyes, I tilt my face toward the hot spray and allow the water to wash them away. It's only when my emotions are wrestled under control that I twist the handle and turn off the steady stream of water before stepping out and grabbing a towel. After drying off, I wrap the plush cotton material around my body and stand in front of the mirror. I swipe my hand over the fogged-up glass and glance at the haunted reflection that stares back at me. You have to tell him. It's only right that he knows the truth. Fresh bile rises in my throat. Once he understands how our pasts are entwined, he'll despise me. And I can't blame him for that. I would despise me too. My shoulders collapse under the crushing weight of that knowledge before I swing away from the mirror, unable to look at myself any longer. I grab a second towel from the sleek silver rack and dry my hair before running a brush through the long strands. The time we've spent at the cabin has been amazing. I feel so much closer to Braden than I did 2 short days ago. But now there's this huge secret weighing me down, pinning me to the earth. There's no way this information won't blow our entire relationship to smithereens. Shrapnel will be everywhere. There's no doubt in my mind that this will alter the path we've been on and send us careening through the atmosphere, never to be the same again. You have to tell him. The backs of my eyes burn as I grab the door handle and open it before stepping inside Braden's room. As soon as I do, his head swivels, gaze coasting over my towel-clad body. A smile curves the edges of his lips as heat ignites in his dark eyes. He wouldn't look at you like that if he knew the truth. In fact, he wouldn't look at you at all. You would cease to exist. Those thoughts are like a knife to my heart. He holds out his hand. Come here, baby. The words are perched on the tip of my tongue. All I have to do is force them out, and I have to do it now. If he touches me, I'll lose my nerve and won't be able to tell him. My tongue darts out to moisten my lips. Braden, come here, he repeats. Voice dipping lower, strumming something deep inside me. We need to talk. Even as I push out the words, I gravitate toward him. It's like there's an invisible string connecting us.
We can talk later. I need you now.
His fingers lock around mine as he tugs me closer to the bed, until I'm tumbling into his arms. My towel unravels before floating to the floor, and then I find myself sprawled out on top of his hard body. My strength wavers as I open my mouth to make one final attempt. Instead of giving me a chance to clear my conscience, his other hand slides into my hair and cups the back of my skull, forcing my lips to his. Once his tongue delves inside my mouth, I'm